Welcome everyone to Animal Voices. Yes, and Gandhi said, I have nothing new to tell you. Non-violence and truth are as old as the hills. Yes, Animal Voices comes to you on CFRO Radio 102.7 FM in Vancouver and affectionately known as Co-op Radio. This program is presented to you by volunteer members of the Vancouver Humane Society, Earth Save Canada, and the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society. My name is Carl Loskin. Alan Jensen is in the control room. In the studio today, we have John Pranger. Hello, John. And we have Marge Adams. Hi, Marge.
Hi.
And also we have in the studio today Marianne Verrigan, the founder of an organization called Society for Animal Freedom and Equality. We'll be shortly with her. We have a great program for you today. At the half-hour mark, we'll be speaking with Simone from Abbotsford, and she is with the Small Animal Rescue Society of BC. And we'll be hearing about an open-to-the-public rat show that is being held in Abbotsford tomorrow. It's called Ratstravaganza. Bring your pet rat. Animal-based diets and the modern intensive animal agriculture violates basic ethical and religious mandates, which is to preserve our health, treat animals with compassion, protect the environment, and conserve natural resources, help hungry people, and pursue peace and nonviolence. The future of the planet is imperiled by the production and consumption of animal products. The world is threatened today as perhaps never before. A switch towards vegetarianism is a social imperative, essential to help shift the world to a more sustainable path, and a religious imperative nested to show the relevance of ancient traditions in modern crises. Contrary to what we have been taught about nutrition, the majority of us are still kept in the dark about what the optimum diet for us consists of. This is not surprising when you realize that most governments that provide us with our nutritional guidelines are connected with very powerful organizations such as the meat, dairy, and the egg industries, who not only expect, but demand that their products are promoted on dietary guidelines. Culture and tradition keeps us tightly glued to addictions and unhealthy habits. Well, as I said before, we have a great privilege today of having Marianne Verrigan. She's a wonderful volunteer for many organizations, and she is now the founder of the Society for Animal Freedom and Equality. So maybe you can just tell us, what does that mean? What does it mean to be a Society for Animal Freedom and Equality? Equality with whom?
No problem. I can explain that. What we mean by equality is elevating our views of animals other than human animals as equally deserving of living a free life as us humans. And we want to give them equal consideration as to how to treat them, just as we would want to be treated ourselves. We do not see them as lesser beings than us. And so we also, to go along with that, freedom means to live a full life of their own, and to be free of oppression and exploitation, and free from being in a position of servitude to humans.
And of course, factory farming, how do you view that?
I see that as inconsistent with the direction that our human species should be going in.
That's right, because it restricts them from their basic natural instincts.
Absolutely.
And so maybe you can just tell us, you've been so involved with the Vancouver Humane Society.
Yes.
Today you're volunteering or working at the Earth Save Canada. Mm-hmm. Just a wonderful organization with so many different, both organizations, with so mm-hmm. many different facets. And always there's a new mm-hmm. angle that they're exploring, a niche that needs to be filled. And there are so many niches.
Yes.
So tell us how you started off on this path towards understanding the glory of the animal kingdom, and that all was not right with how we're treating the animals.
Sure. I'm very fortunate to work with both organizations, with Vancouver Humane Society and Earth Save Canada, and there are so many organizations out there that are doing really good work. And I've been involved in the animal rights world for about 6 years now, and I could see that there's a little bit of a missing element in most organizations, that they focus on the individual issues, such as factory farming or that kind of thing, or circuses. And what I kept on asking myself was, well, why is this allowed to happen to animals? And what I found was that the common element, the common cause of all these issues, was people's perceptions towards animals as being less than us in some way. And so that's where the idea for Safe Society for Animal Freedom and Equality came from, is to focus on that root cause that is common through all of the issues.
Very nice. Now, you grew up in Grand Forks and
yes.
From a Dukabur background.
Yes.
And they understand these issues as well about animals.
Yes, I was raised as a vegetarian, and that is part of the Dukabur background, is that they extend the belief that animal thou shalt not kill extends to animals as well as humans. And so they believe in living a vegetarian lifestyle. And so I was very fortunate to have been instilled with those values early on.
Then you came to Vancouver and you saw there was volunteer opportunities, and then you got deeper involved.
Yes, I've lived in Vancouver about 11 years, and I was always searching for something to do with animals, and I was fortunate to see an ad for a job for Bear Defenders. That was my first step into the animal rights world, and the world that I wanted to get into some way, and I worked there for many years, and after a few years working there, I moved on to now work at Vancouver Humane Society part-time and Earth Save Canada part-time, and then I started Safe on the side.
Now, all through your years of doing work with these organizations, mm-hmm. has there been any significant event that maybe you'd like to tell us about? Something that got organized, maybe just something or other?
Something that shaped my
views? Something, I mean, people who speak about animals are not always the most popular people in the street. I mean, you know, it's not the Hockey Players Association won't exactly embrace these people at their at their meet. So MEAT.
That's true. Well, I think we are quite regular people. I don't know what normal is in society these days.
We are steaming towards mainstream, and Co-op Radio and you being here contributes towards that.
Thank you.
People understand the issues, whereas previously mm-hmm. it was a blank wall. Mm-hmm. And I think we've reached a point of critical mass where, you know, regularly mm-hmm. there are articles in the newspapers
yes.
that highlight the issues that you would like to see in there.
Yes, it's increasingly. And I think that's because people are questioning, you know, the way that society has been building, and we see so many problems. And I think a lot of that could be attributed to our disconnect from animals and from all other species. And I think reconnecting with them and our emotional attachment to them will help us a long way in solving a lot of the problems that we see in the world today.
Now, you escaped this little question that
I
wanted to have.
Sorry.
A little story from you and
right.
all your years of speaking to people. So did you come up with something in your subconscious mind here?
Well, I can tell a story of what inspired me. And it's a little bit of an odd story, I think, that I had the opportunity to meet Eddie Lama. I actually met him more through phone conversations first, and then he inspired me.
Tell us who Eddie Lama is.
Oh, Eddie Lama, for those who don't know, he is the star of The Witness, which is a documentary by the Tribe of Heart, and it explains and shows his transition towards his beliefs about animals and into activism on their behalf.
So he ran this big engineering business in New York.
Yes, and still
and
does.
And then picked up a cat from a garbage dump or was running around.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And then there were more cats and more cats.
Yes.
And and then when he had a big business, and he always had to tell the people when he was employing them, mm-hmm. he said, well, we have a few cats in the office.
Yes.
And they were all pets. And then he took over the activism. And what did he do with his truck?
He turned it into a moving video screen, basically, called a Faunavision. And he goes around the streets of New York City showing some terrible footage, unfortunately, but the truth to people of what happens to animals. And I think that a lot of it is about fur. And he has a really good experience with people's reaction to that.
So his plumbing truck, I think,
yes.
becomes a video truck.
Yeah.
He parks it on the equivalent of Robson Street,
yes.
opens the doors,
yes.
and has the TV inside,
yes.
with speakers,
yes.
and people can watch the movies about animal cruelty.
Yes.
But now the story, the witness, is all about Eddie Lama.
Yes.
And he changed your life.
He inspired me to go to the Animal Rights Conference in Washington, D.C., and he helped me go there. And I had an experience actually at his Faunavision. He brought his van there, and he was showing some footage. And it wasn't a cruelty situation that inspired me. It was actually showing some raccoons that were in a rehabilitation situation where a raccoon had been orphaned. And for some reason, something, that raccoon looked into my eyes, and something connected very deeply. And from that moment on, I dedicated myself for real. I made the commitment to, I'm actually getting a little choked up thinking about it. It was very powerful.
Now, so many of the wonderful events that they have, mm-hmm. the Vancouver Humane Society mm-hmm. is planning to be outside the art gallery on
yes.
the 12th of August.
Yes.
But you are going to be the keynote speaker. If people want to hear more about and see her, like I'm looking into her eyes right now.
They're a little teary.
And you'd like to, and they'd like to come to a wonderful event at EarthSave at the Spec Building. So
yes.
tell us basically what happens there. What is a vegan potluck, by the way?
Vegan potluck is where everybody brings a dish for about eight people that is with no animal products, and everyone gets to share in everyone's prepared dishes, and you just have a really great social gathering and taste really good food and realize that vegans are not deprived of good food, and it's a good social atmosphere, and as well you meet new people and people who may be like-minded with you and are open to helping the world be a better place. And each time they'll have different speakers, and happens to be that this coming one, I am the guest speaker, along with Evan McGraw from Food Not Bombs. And we're going to be talking about our organizations and a little bit more about what we're about and what you can do to get involved and answer. It's an opportunity to ask questions. And
so now earthsave.bc.ca.
Yes.
That's, people should have that on their favorites there.
Absolutely.
How is it?
earthsave.bc.ca.
And they can get the details. It's at 6
yes.
o'clock
yes.
on Sunday at
Sunday.
The Spec Building.
Yes, on Sunday the 30th.
It's Maple and 6th.
Yes.
There's a gardens there, isn't there?
Yeah, the City Farmer Gardens, and there's community gardens around there. And it's such a beautiful, wonderful atmosphere in that area.
So they can go and stroke the lavender plants
yes.
and at the same time then go inside and, as you said, do a wonderful vegan food.
Yes.
And people bring,
it's amazing.
They must have spent all of Sunday from about 5 o'clock in the morning preparing the stuff.
Some people do.
Anyway.
There's prizes for the best dishes, so there is incentive to get creative and create really good food.
You know, I'm very creative when I go there.
Oh, yes.
I buy some melon and some watermelon, cut up into little slices, and it takes me about 15 minutes to do it, and off I am. So it doesn't have to be a big
exactly.
what people do. You know,
yeah.
do it according to you. The main thing is to invite people to come to the Earth Save event, a potluck, meet other people, socialize, and see what wonderful food can be there. Earthsave.bc.ca.
Yes.
And you hear Evan McGraw and Marianne Berrigan speaking there. So that's wonderful. Anyway, anything else you wanted to maybe just give us a favorite quote? Something.
Oh, favorite quote. My favorite quote is by Gandhi, just like you mentioned from the beginning of the show. He once said, "Be the change you want to see in the world." And I have that plastered around my house. I try to live by that, and I would like to inspire other people to live by that quote as well. And I would like to also invite people to go to Society for Animal Freedom and Equality's website as well at www.animalequality.org.
Animalequality.org, mm-hmm. and it's actually the acronym is SAFE.
SAFE is the acronym, yes.
Yeah, and maybe just tell us something about what you plan to do with Society for Animal Freedom and Equality. What kind of events? How are you going to promote your ideas that you've so wonderfully told our listeners about today?
Our main functions are educational, and we'll give presentations like we are on Sunday. We'll also be out in the community, like we'll be at the Vancouver Humane Society's event for Animal Rights Day, and I'll have a table there as well, and we'd like to do more of those kind of things, and one-on-one support to people, and we really try to break down the and challenge the excuses people use of why we are supposed to use animals, and show how inconsistent that is. And so it's mostly through dialogue and through education and providing resources and support to see us as a support system. And on our website, you'll find a forum that people can discuss if there are challenges, if they need some help. And it's really open to anyone who's curious and who wants to make the world a better place, regardless if they're already vegan or not. We want to hear from them.
Right. So give us the webpage once more of your organization.
It's www.animalequality.org.
Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you.
Berrigan, for being on Animal Voices. And we're going to go over to Alan Jensen, and we're going to have some music. Alan, how about that? So...
On Sunday, July 30th, from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m., join us on the radio or in person at the Radio Station Cafe for the Downtown Eastside Radio Cabaret, a great selection of local musicians, poets, and other performers hosted by the fabulous Mr. Earl Crow. Sign up is at 8:30 p.m., only on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM.
My grandpa was a cowboy, and his pa before him. They rode the range, killed the buffalo, and fought the Indian. But the great herd's on the prairie, and the wild frontier is gone. So to carry on my heritage, I go out and ride the lawn. Ride the lawn. Ride the lawn. Here on my quarter acre lot, I sing my freedom song. Ride the lawn. Ride the lawn. We'll hunt the dandelion down and whack him till he's gone. My neighbor is a slacker, and he rarely rides the lawn. He says that he likes wildflowers with dew on them at dawn. But the enemy travels quickly when the winds are strong. Next week while he's on vacation, his dandies will be gone. Ride the lawn,
ride the lawn,
ride the lawn,
ride the lawn.
Here on my my quarter acre lot, I sing my freedom song. Ride the long,
ride the long,
ride the long. We'll hunt the dandelion down and whack him till he's gone.
Ride the long.
The problem with suburbia is you cannot shoot your gun. So how does one kill herds of moles who eat grass just for fun? Well, I've loaded up my arsenal with shells and ammo cans, and under cover of the fireworks, July 4th, I'll make my stand.
Ride the law,
ride the law,
ride the law,
ride the law.
Here on my quarter acre lot, I sing my freedom song. Ride the law,
ride the law,
ride the law. We'll hunt the dandelion down and whack him till he's gone.
Ride the law.
My son came home from college, and he criticized my lawn. He said fertilizers, herbicides, and pesticides are wrong. Well, I'll listen to your politics and your weirdo leftist songs, but when you're under my roof, don't you dare speak ill of lawns.
Ride the law,
ride the law,
ride the law,
ride the law.
Here on my quarter acre lot, I sing my freedom song. Ride the law,
ride the law,
ride the law. We'll hunt the dandelion down and whack him till he's gone.
Ride the law.
Yes, and that was Dana Lyon singing Ride the Lawn. I could just hear those blades whirling around there. So, cutting the lawn. You're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFRO Radio 102.7 FM in Vancouver. We have Marge Adams, and you have a little message for us today. So, yes. Over to you.
Thank you, Carl. There are 26 million egg-laying hens in Canada, and 98% of them are kept in battery cages. Now, what this means...
It's not... not okay.
Sorry, I guess the mic was not on. There are 26 million egg-producing hens in Canada, and 98% of them are kept in battery cages, which means that they spend their entire lives in wire cages so small that they cannot flap their wings, walk, scratch on the ground, dust bathe, or perform any other activities that are normal to chickens. They are confined in this manner for 1 to 2 years when they are worn out, no longer useful to the producing company, and they are sent off to slaughter. And that is their only release for those terribly barren, from those terribly barren lives that they are forced to lead. Extremely cruel business, and one that we should do everything we can to end. In other countries, Switzerland, for example, they have a termination date on these factory-producing hens, that will come up in a few years. And I would suggest that for the sake of your own health, you can imagine eggs produced by hens living in this situation are not going to be the best food. And for the environment, this type of production is extremely detrimental to the environment, and also, of course, for the sake of those hens who suffer their entire lives. Do not buy hen eggs that are produced in this manner. Now, the only way you can be sure of that is that you find eggs that are labeled certified organic. And ones that are marked as certified organic have actually been, the barns are inspected, and there's a government agency that makes sure that they are in fact certified organic, and the hens are able to exercise and eat good food, etc. And they are not forced to spend their entire lives as captive in these terrible wire cages, which are piled on each other four high, and the feces from the one above comes down on the lower captive birds, which is just not acceptable, and we need to do something about it. And some people are doing it. They're not buying eggs from battery hen cages. So please, the next time you shop for eggs, look for certified organic.
What about the City Hall now, Marge, with regard to that, now that we have a new class, a new government? Are they sort of
a new council?
Yeah, a new council. Now, there is a policy in place now which demands environmental considerations.
I think that is in jeopardy now.
It is,
indeed, yes.
Uh-huh. Yes, and we have good. Well, we have a wonderful person on the line from Abbotsford, and it's Simone, and she's from the Small Animal Rescue. Welcome to Animal Voices, Simone.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great because you're going to be having a great event in Abbotsford this coming weekend, and maybe you can tell us, you're from this organization called Small Animal Rescue, and your webpage is smallanimalrescue.org. So what is your main function?
Basically, we rescue any type of small animal, mostly rabbits, guinea pigs, rats, chinchillas, and we're a nonprofit society, and basically we take in the ones that nobody else wants, and a lot of them are special needs, and we just take care of them and house them in a network of different foster homes, and hopefully we'll find forever homes for them.
And so now you're having a convention this coming weekend. Now, what kind of animals, small animals, are you dealing with?
It's going to be a rat show called Rat Travaganza that is coming up tomorrow, Saturday, July 29th. So it's basically rats only.
Yes, so rats have families too. And
exactly.
I was looking at one of your flyers here, and it shows one of them. I could buy a sort of a nationalistic looking maple leaf, and it has a little rat crawling around it here.
Yeah.
And also you have there's going to be prizes there, and you have a prize mug trophy.
Yep.
And popping out of the trophy, a cup, is the face of a little mouse or rat,
with
its tail looking very cheerful.
Yeah.
Now, most people are somewhat, think this is somewhat beyond over the top, to put it that way. But there is a serious side to this, because tell us about rats and make us endeared to them somehow or other when we understand them better.
Well, for one, the rats that we keep as pets are domesticated rats. They've been pets for about 100 years, so they don't really have all that much in common anymore with wild rats. They're really, really social. They love hanging out with people. They make great pets. They're really clean. They can even be litter box trained. They love just sitting on your shoulder. If they trust you and they like you, they'll actually lick you like little dogs. They're really smart. You can train them all sorts of tricks. We have somebody who adopted two boy rats from us, and they know, how to sit on command, shake a paw, high five.
Oh. The rat can shake a paw?
On command, just like a dog. It's just, you have to spend a lot of time with them, just with any... Because a lot of people, they think, I'm going to get this little animal, I'm going to stick it in a tiny, tiny little cage, feed it once a day, and that's it. And then people, unfortunately, they think, they're not doing anything. But if you actually spend time with them, you'll just, they have so much personality. And just like, you know, I always call them that they're almost comparable to little dogs because they're so smart and can be trained. And
now, do they go to their own little corner for, you know, where they do their business?
Yep. Girl rats are generally very, very clean. Boy rats, sometimes they kind of like to mark their own territory, so they're sometimes not quite that dependable. But, you know, they groom themselves to keep clean, and every once in a while you can give them a bath. But,
so how do you train them to be potty, to go to the potty? How do you do that?
Well, you first at the beginning, you just have a little litter box, and then when they go somewhere, like sometimes they pick their own corner, so you just kind of put it there and they automatically go there. And at the beginning, you might want to scoop up where they went and put it in the box, and so after a while, they generally start to figure out where to go and what you want from them.
So they're incredibly smart, and
they're incredibly smart,
social, yeah. They like humans.
Yeah.
And humans don't seem to like them. I mean, but we have a new organization in Abbotsford, and you're giving a new dimension to the lives of rats.
Yeah. Hopefully people will realize just how fun they are, because they are, because a lot of small animals, they don't really like to be or like to interact with people that much. Like, they don't like to be picked up. But the rats are totally different. They really like to be with people and other rats. That's another thing I should stress. Rats should never be kept alone, again, because they're so social. And there's nothing cuter than seeing two rats all cuddled up in their hammock. So they're definitely very, very social animals.
Well, taking good care of rats fits in with our principles here on Animal Voices, which is that of respecting all life.
Yeah.
And but now we know rabbits, they can multiply, and even if you have unspayed dogs and cats, they can. But I think rats beat them all.
They're pretty much definitely up there.
How many?
They can have up to about 20 babies per litter. It's rare that it's all that
every
that
how
much,
often?
But the average probably around 10 babies per litter every 3 weeks. And the babies, like, they become fertile when they're 5 weeks old. And that's a lot of people, you know, they don't know what they're doing. And it can get out of hand really, really fast if you're not on top of things.
Soon we'll have an organization promoting spay and neuter rats.
Neuter rats, yep, that's definitely can be done.
Marge has got a question for you, but when you come back, we want to hear all about this this event that you're having tomorrow in Abbotsford. So over to Marge.
Do you recommend if people have, and you don't want a single rat, we know that, because they are very sociable. So what do you recommend, that you have either two females or two males and not a combination?
Yeah, that's best. Unless you spay and neuter the rats, then they can be obviously male-female, can live together.
And will most vets spay or neuter rats?
No. Unfortunately, there's only a few vets that are specialized to deal with small animals, and it's important that you do your research and just don't hand them to just about any vet, because a lot of people say that they will treat rats or other small animals, and they really don't really know what they're doing.
I see.
So it's definitely something that you'll have to do your research, and if somebody has a hard time finding a good rat vet, then they feel free to contact us, and we can refer them to.
Now, one of the most abused systems that rats are being used for is animal experimentation, and they think that what's good for rats is, you know, from a medical point of view, would also be good for humans. But John has a question here for you.
I just wanted to know how big these rats are that we're talking about here.
They're not as big as you see them in the movies, you know, where people get the nightmares from. Although boy rats, they can get pretty big. I think females usually maybe 250 grams, more or less. Males about 450 grams.
So can they fit in your pocket, or how do you
how do you interact with these? A lot of people, they have them, you know, in their hoods of their sweaters, and they just walk around like this. And a lot of people, you'll never know that they have rats.
Did you say they diverged have been domesticated for about 100 years only?
Yeah, from what I read.
How did anybody ever get the idea to domesticate a rat? Because, you know, generally we think of them as dangerous or as nasty.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know where that came from. Maybe somebody found like an orphan baby rat and raised it, or
maybe it was raised by the professional breeders for the medical experimentation industry.
Could be as well. Yeah,
and there you have many varieties of rats, don't you?
Yeah, there's all sorts of different standards,
and they're all very different.
Yeah.
And you know, how different is a mouse from a rat, let's say, because they seem very similar, and yet there are profound differences, aren't there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, the rats are bigger than a mouse, for sure.
They'll also hunt mice, won't they?
They will, yeah. In the wild, they, like wild rats, will hunt and kill mice.
I understand that a rat can't breathe through its nostrils, through its nose. They can't breathe through its mouth.
Oh, yeah, and they can throw up as well.
They can't throw up?
No.
Oh,
no.
They can't vomit.
Yeah.
And what do you think of this idea of rats being experimented on for human medicine? Is that a logical idea, or is that a bit over the top and crazy?
You know, this is one thing where I kind of don't want to go there because it's really upsetting for me. Because I just, you know, I look at them as if they're my own pets, obviously.
Yes.
You know, I don't really look at them as...
Well, there you go. And if people would only think these are gentle, delicate, highly sensitive creatures. They're not the sewer rats that most people will think. Let's experiment on the rats. Who cares?
Yeah.
It's not like that at all, is it?
No. It's really sad. A lot of people, even you know, if we tell them that, oh yeah, we just had a tumor removed of a rat and we spent $200, they look at me and you're like, are you crazy? It's just a small animal. And I'm like, you know what? They're my pets. They're part of my family. You know, if your mom has a tumor, you're not going to, you know, just ignore it. It's just, you know, they're family, and so you want to take good care of them.
Well, even the wild rats, they're only there because humans are dirty.
Well, they have their role in nature, but for sure, exactly. If, you know, somebody has, you know, their backyard, tons of junk and food left over, of course they're going to live there and you know, breathe, because, you know, that's what they like, and that's what they do, so...
Yeah, and then we blame them for our own mistakes.
Yeah.
It's strange. Yeah. Anyway, thank you.
No problem.
Now Simone, I want you to tell the story about your relationship between your dog and the rats. You remember the little story? You had a little story about... you have a dog, do you?
Yeah, I have a 60-pound mutt.
And how does he manage with these little other critters around there? He understands there's love to be spread around all the way?
Yeah. He loves, like, he loves the little ones. They're almost like his little babies. We have them run all over him. And I have actually a picture of him where he's lying on the couch and he has a little baby rat underneath his armpit and he looks down and just licks it. And the rats, they have no respect of him, even though, you know, it wouldn't take much considering, you know, he's 60 pounds. They're like about half a pound. But they're like their little babies, and he would definitely protect them. If, you know, he sees a cat chase a rat outside, he'll feel sorry for the rat and will go after the cat. Mm-hmm. Not that he would hurt the cat, but he'll just tell her, okay, you know what, I'm here too.
You know, Simon, I had an experience with a mouse last week when I went to visit my friend Patricia Grone.
Yeah.
And I walked inside there, and she has a baby, like a kitten. It's quite young. And I suddenly heard this rustling around there, and I saw that there was a mouse in the house as well, in the living room. So I looked at this beautiful mouse, and it saw me. And on the other side of it, on its backside, the cat was. But, you know, I'm a more frightening aspect. I'm about 6'5", and the much more formidable, potentially, from a mouse's point of view, than the cat.
Yeah.
So the mouse turned around and ran straight towards the cat. And the cat jumped back.
Shock.
My own cat scared of the rat.
Total shock. And in the meantime, this smart, smart mouse had a chance to go underneath the couch. And I said to Patricia, I said, I don't think your cat's going to eat this mouse. And I certainly would like to help this mouse get out into the wild where it belongs. But are you concerned that there's a mouse in your living room? She says, no.
I think it's a cat.
was it?
No, it wasn't the pet. She doesn't keep much. Anyway, so you're going to tell us about the event. And, you know, we want to tell us about the many different varieties of mice, of rats that you're going to be at the show on Saturday on Mount Lehman Road. Give us the full, it's called Rat Stravaganza at Mount Lehman Road, 6418, and give us your web page because people can see it there. And if they like to meet some of the people from the Rat Fanciers Club, they're coming from all over North America to be in Abbotsford to be at your event there. So tell us about it. Tell us about the different types of rats and what constitutes a prized rat. Well, all those questions I want you to answer right now.
Okay, there's different varieties, which basically means different kinds of coats that they have. There's hairless rats, there's tailless rats, rex and double rex, satin, and then there's two different type of ear types. There's the standard ears or the Dumbo ears. With the Dumbo ears, think Dumbo the elephant, you know, the big round ears. And then there's all sorts of different colors, such as agouti, cinnamon, chocolate, lilac, Russian blue, etc. There's quite a few different colors. And then just the different markings, such as hooded rats, Irish Dalmatian mask, just anything really. And at the rat show, there's going to be two different parts. The first part is basically the show rats, where they're being marked. You know, if a rat, like I said, essentially has a good color, a good marking, such, you know, as a Irish marking, or, you know, if it has nice ears, Dumbo ears, or standard ears, and just, you know, how it essentially fits to the standard. And then the second part, which is my personal favorite, is basically going to be pet rats that are doing all sorts of funny things, such as they're going to be judged as which rat has the longest tail, or which rat is the squishiest, which one gives the best kisses. There's going to be rat races. And obviously the best tricks, which I look forward to as well. And it's going to be a great event. It's going to start at, the show is going to start at 11 a.m. It's at the Mount Lehman Hall in Abbotsford. And basically at this point I would like to stress that if people could please leave their own rats at home, the ones that are going to be at the show, they had to be registered 3 weeks prior to the show and had to be in quarantine since then, just to make sure that everybody's kind of safe. You never know. There's some diseases that rats can get, so we want to make sure that all of our pet rats are going to be safe, but it's still going to be fun. Our rescue's going to be down there, different other rescues as well. There's going to be reputable breeders and vendors that sell all sorts of, you know, products that you might need for rats, such as hammocks and food. And I think the organizer told me that there's even going to be the person there who has a little ratty bakery that makes little muffins for rats. So it's definitely going to be a great event. I look forward to myself. And it's the first rat show in BC, and we're hoping to make it a yearly event.
What do the races look like?
Oh, I'm sure there's going to be like a maze where they have to go through, and whichever does it the first, the fastest will win.
Oh, not chuck wagons or things.
No, no.
Now these rats, where's their favorite spot to be scratched?
That kind of depends on the rat. Mine usually kind of like it on top of their head or their cheeks. But others, you know, are fine with getting a belly rub, or it's, you know,
right.
Just like people, we all have our preferences, and
right.
The same with the rat.
Well, Simone, I'm very tempted to come because it's only a dollar to go to this Rat Stravaganza in Abbotsford, and people can go to your webpage. Maybe you can give it to us, and they can get the information from there.
The webpage for the show is ratspacknw.org /bcshow.htm.
Don't you have a simpler one, like small animal?
Yeah, smallanimalrescue.org works as well.
that'll work. So go to smallanimalrescue.org. It's easy for people to remember.
Yeah.
And go and see what our animal kindred species, what we can learn from them.
Yeah, for sure. And they're very interesting little creatures.
Yes. Thank you for being on Animal Voices and
for
giving us a wonderful insight into the lives of rats.
You're welcome.
Bye for now.
Thanks, bye.
You're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFR Radio 102.7 FM in Vancouver. And Albert Schweitzer said, by having reverence for life, we enter into a spiritual relation with the world. So, one of our prime motivations here on Animal Voices is that we really feel that something wonderful that you can do for yourself and all life on earth is to eat a diet of organic, unprocessed food that is free from animal products. And over to Alan Jensen, and you have some music for us, Alan. Over to Alan. Yes, you're listening to Animal Voices, coming to you on CFR Radio 102.7 FM, and many of our programs are posted on our webpage, animalvoices.org. And if you, John Pranger is our webmaster, he kindly posts us, and maybe last week's program is on the show. John, what did we have on the show last week? Maybe just tell us a little bit. We had Barbara Murray on there telling
Barbara
us.
Barbara Murray. And what was that about?
That was about the Boo the black bear.
Oh, yes.
Maybe can you recall that story?
Well, as a matter of fact, he escaped from his compound to go consort with a female, I believe, and then decided that he wasn't getting enough to eat out there, and came back.
Yes.
And dug his way out under an electric fence. So he was smart enough to understand that he couldn't get through the fence, but he could get under it. Now, that's amazing.
And he did it twice. But the Barbara Murray explained how people said, oh, this bear wanted to go back into captivity. But she explained to us so nicely that this is the way bears are. They know where the food is, and they do a big circle and go from there to there.
Uh-huh.
Go to the same places where the food is.
So she was about to move on.
It was just of one many places.
A stop.
Yeah. And then, of course, the reason why she dug underneath the electric fence twice was because it was mating season, Boo the bear.
Uh-huh.
And she was seen with this, the mate, and then they... These authorities thought, this was a bear. They should bring her back and castrate him and all kinds of horrible things. But anyway, it's also a story about a bear where there's a hunter up north, and people can still buy hunting licenses, and we really feel this trophy hunting is should be something of the past.
So the bear was actually an orphan.
Who was an orphan? It was a hunter who shot the mother.
Illegal poacher.
Out of season.
Yes.
The baby Boo was captured and was on Grouse Mountain for about 2-3 years. And then, of course, the bear gets used to so many people, you see. Everybody had a look at the bears there. And they studied them, and they did an interesting discovery there, because they discovered that something they never knew before about hibernation of bears. They know they recycle their urine, but also that during the hibernation, they wanted to know why, if people don't activate their bodies, they suffer osteoporosis and their bones atrophy. But they discovered that, in fact, these bears move around a lot during the hibernation period.
So they're not always asleep.
So they were studying these grizzlies up at Grouse Mountain, but they'd gotten used to people, and now the question was what to do with this bear, and basically my feeling is it should go somewhere where it can't be in touch with people or hunters, because it's not afraid of people. So we also had last week, it's on our webpage, animalvoices.org, we had Dr. Lurie on the program.
A naturopathic physician who told some stories of wildlife and his encounters with wildlife.
Do you remember any of the stories?
No, I can't always pay attention to the show because I have other things to do.
You have thoughts of your own. But I remember that story about where he went, that we're going to track... I think some very special type of deer they wanted to see. And they were in the Kalahari. And this bushman, he said, we're going to find it. He says, no, I'll run ahead and I can see the tracks. It shows you.
It's going about 30 miles an hour.
How in tune these bushmen are to their nature, the environment. It's the desert. I've been in the Kalahari.
I'd heard of stories of the Indian runners who... ran messages throughout North America, and they would run for days and not tire. And same with this indigenous person. He could run at 30 miles an hour in front of that truck and never gasp for breath.
And then he incredible found physiques. And he found the animal. He says, it's over there. But even in the Inca cultures, the Inca rulers, they covered a distance from Ecuador all the way down to Peru, thousands of miles. And they did it with runners. You know, like it shows you how our new lifestyle has really changed us in this era.
Yeah, we're a very weakened species.
We're a weakened species, but you can do something about it. Go to the Earth Set Potluck on Sunday, meet some good friends.
Eat mineral-rich organic food.
Mineral-rich, something wonderful you can do for yourself and all life on Earth. But you know, John, the Earth Set people, they put out a wonderful newsletter as well. And I know we've had this on Animal Voices before, but I think it's so well worth repeating. It's that Dave Steele wrote an article, and he says, another inconvenient truth. And the inconvenient truth is, of course, about global warming. The other inconvenient is that we need to look at the high cost to the environment of our meat-centered diet. And there was a statistic that came from the University of Chicago that showed a person eating an average American diet constitutes the equivalent of about 1.5 tons more CO2 to the atmosphere each year than does a person on a vegan diet. That's more than the difference between driving a Hummer H3 and a Toyota Prius 5,000 kilometers in the city.
Well, that's very much an inconvenient truth for the health nannies who tell us that we have to eat meat, otherwise we'll, you know, kick the bucket.
Well, we're growing all this grain up to 90% of all the corn we grow, up to 85% of all the soya we grow, we feed to animals. I mean, is that an efficient turnaround?
Not at all. And these are laced with you know, the oil-derived petrochemicals, which run off into the rivers and cause pollution, and you know, drive up the price of oil, which now we're fighting each other to the death for. It's all a complicated business that everybody can dismantle with a very, very simple effect, and that is that meat eating, it takes the heaviest toll in terms of environmental destruction.
That's it's ruining groundwater here in the Fraser Valley. It's cruel to the animals. 50,000 chickens in a pen. They're producing foie gras. It's a somewhat elitist thing to do, to go to one restaurant and eat this product of animal cruelty. KFC, which is there's a program by People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Marge earlier was talking about the chicken out program from the Vancouver Humane Society. Maybe you can just give us a little reminder there. What was this?
We got 1 minute.
Oh, 1 minute. All right. Well, the chicken out campaign has been going on for some time now with the Vancouver Humane Society, with considerable interest from people and success from grocers. The selling of certified organic eggs is higher now, and one or two shops are selling mainly certified organic. Mind you, they are more expensive, but they're better quality eggs, and they're much, much kinder to the hens that lay them, so that we're encouraging everybody to buy only certified organic. Or, you know, on the other hand, you could give up eggs. There are some good substitutes. The other day I used flaxseed, 1 tablespoon of flaxseed, 2 tablespoons of water, put them in my blender, and they will serve as a thickener, just as eggs do. And there are other substitutes as well that are available, so that yes, it's important. We want to improve our treatment of animals in every way possible.
Thank you, Marge. And the Vancouver Humane Society does a wonderful job. Something, the primary source of the foods we eat and the air we breathe comes from plants. And in closing, our webpage is animalvoices.org. And last week we had this wonderful quote from Scott Halsey, who said that the animals are our teachers. They are currently making great sacrifices for us. When everyone has learned from this sacrifice, there will be a new level of relating as equal beings. Thank you for listening.